You are listening to Awaken Ananda, produced by the Lighter Side Network. Visit the Lighter Side Network at thelightersidenetwork.com for hundreds of free video episodes and podcasts that explore wholeness living, energy work, communicating with spirit, and more. The Lighter Side Network, where the everyday meets the extraordinary.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Awaken Ananda podcast, episode one. I'm your host, Priya Lakhi, and I am so excited to be here today for our first official episode. And I'm even more thrilled to be able to share this moment with one of my dearest friends, Phoebe, who's joining us from Austin. And I'm super excited that she gets to ask me questions today. I wanted to figure out a great way to introduce myself to all of the listeners, and I really didn't feel like just sitting up here and talking about who I am and what I do, and I thought, what a better way than to bring on my friend who knows me really well and allow her an opportunity to ask me anything she wants, raw and unscripted. And so, Phoebe, I'm so thrilled that you're here today, and thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
No, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. It's very rare that you get to share moments like this with your, you know, good friends. And I'm just so thrilled to be here and to be introducing such a wonderful person to your listeners. So thanks for having me.
Thank you. And you inspire me so much. Phoebe has a podcast that has over 90,000 listeners a week, and she is just rocking this podcast life. And you have been a huge inspiration for me to get out of my comfort zone and start the Awaken Ananda podcast. And so I really want to thank you for your inspiration and your encouragement.
That's so nice. You're so welcome. I just am thrilled for this next chapter for you, because I think there's so much, you have so much wisdom that people need to hear. And the way that you, just your view on life and the way that you are choosing to do life is so important and so relevant. And it's something that more people need to hear. So I'm glad that you have a voice and on this show, and I'm just thrilled to be part of it.
We're just going to gush on each other for the next 30 minutes. I love that. So Phoebe and I met in Costa Rica about 3 years ago at a retreat that we were at together. And she was actually just in Atlanta this past weekend to interview one of her idols. Phoebe, do you want to share who that was?
I do want to share. I want to tell everybody who.
Go for it.
So Mia Hamm, who is 2-time World Cup champion and also Olympic gold medalist. And she has been an idol and inspiration of mine since, I mean, I was maybe in single digits. So I was like 9 or 10. And I was just thrilled to do it and to have you there. So it feels like I get to, you know, as you said, turn the tables, but also you got to be there for such a big moment in my life. And now I get to be there for yours. So this is really cool and really exciting.
Well, you know, I'm not Mia Hamm status yet. Yet.
But, I mean, yeah. Says who? I think so. You're pretty awesome.
Well, I am pretty awesome. But this is what I love about each other, right? I love that in our friendship, there seems to be not only a deep joy and pleasure in just being around each other, but a deep commitment to see the other rise and step into our fullest power and potential. And the thing is, Phoebe and I met completely randomly at an event in Costa Rica. We were talking about it this past weekend. This is what brought Mia Hamm up, is that we decided to become roommates for a 4-day event in a foreign country, and we hadn't even talked on the phone or said hello to each other.
And I think 2 days before, I was like, hey, are we still doing this? Like, right. What's going on? Yeah.
Yeah. Are we still roommates? And the thing, and here's the thing, and this is why, to me, it's undeniable that we have past lives and that we have soul connections and that we have come from other places and other planets, because you could have walked into that room 30 seconds after Phoebe and I meeting and totally assumed that we had known each other for 10 years, because it was such a joy and an ease and a flow in our energy and our relationship. And it's just only gotten stronger. And it's just moments like that that remind me, like, yes, there is more to life than I can physically see, because you cannot deny the energetic connection that you and I have.
Totally. And I think every time we hang out, people know that. And they're like, God, have you guys been friends since you were kids? And we're like, I mean, yeah, yes. Let's just go with that. Yes.
Kids. Yeah, and souls.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I remember that moment so clearly. And I remember how we just like totally connected. And it was such a fun, as you said, easy way of living. And, you know, to see how our lives have totally shifted and changed in even the last three and a half years, whenever it was. And like to where we are now, it's really cool to be on this journey and get to experience really interesting changes and shifts and growth for both of us. So this is really, yeah, it's really cool that we are such good friends. I love it.
I love it too. And I love you. And fire away. I am ready. You can ask me anything you want. No question is off the table.
Awesome. So I was just about to say, can I have the mic already? Let's get this thing going. Let's stop delaying and talking about how awesome I am. And let's talk about how awesome you are. So I just want, you know, when I heard the name of the podcast, the name of your business, all of that, I really want to know, what is Awaken Ananda? Why did you choose that name?
Yeah. So I talked a little bit about this in episode zero, but I love when people ask me this question because I know that I'm introducing many of the listeners to a new word. And Ananda is a Sanskrit word, which means the field of all possibility or your highest potential. And it was the word in which my own healing journey has been inspired by. And I really wanted an active word in front of it, something that signified that if we wanted to reach our ultimate bliss or the possibility within each of us, then I knew that I needed to contribute and co-create that energy. And so that's why the word awaken was the word that I chose to put before Ananda, because I feel like for me and a lot of the work that I do and the passion that I have is to literally help people awaken from autopilot, awaken from a life that they think they should have into a life that actually resonates with who they are. And so Awaken Ananda is awaken to your highest potential in the field of all possibility. That is, to me, a very profound part of the mission that I think I have on this planet.
Totally. And I have seen that firsthand. And I also, just in hearing you say that, right, so much of that relates to, obviously, your story and the way that you've been raised and also the way that you've shifted and changed and the evolution of Priya. And so I just want to go back now, if we had to go back in time and look at you as a kid, your childhood, set the scene.
Yeah, you know, well, I was born in India and I moved to the United States when I was 5 years old. And my parents moved, like many immigrant stories, to provide all of us a better life and a better opportunity. And from Mumbai, India, where I was born, we landed in Columbus, Ohio, where my dad's brother was already living. And so again, like the immigrant story, you try to come to the city or the state where you have some connection, some family. So we land in Columbus, Ohio, and nothing, and I mean nothing, is the same. And my parents went from, you know, being surrounded by family and friends to living in a foreign country with nothing familiar around them. And that's a really hard transition. It's a really hard transition as a parent. And I think it's a hard transition as a child. And so my childhood was spent with many, many years of turmoil, of trying to balance my Indian heritage and my American life. And same with my parents. My parents were trying to balance who they were and yet assimilate to a culture who, quite frankly, didn't really accept them or who they are and what they looked like. Like, I remember a moment in time where my father came home from work. And he, by the way, he was a lawyer in India, but he couldn't be a lawyer in America. So his whole identity had to shift. And he was constantly struggling with how to make ends meet. How was he going to provide for his family? And so, but I remember he came home from work one day and he said, well, I've got to change my name. We were like, what? And he had to change his Indian sounding name to an American name because everyone was struggling with how to pronounce his name, and it made him feel really isolated and alone. And so my childhood was filled with moments of trying to figure out where I fit in and what it all meant. And I felt like I was constantly fighting a dual identity. And so I got really good at just being two different people. So I became, you know, an American girl at school, and I would come home and become a good Indian girl at home because I couldn't figure out the balance between the two. And so many, many, many months of my childhood caused quite a bit of turmoil, not because my parents were bad people, but because we were all struggling to figure out how we fit into a foreign land.
And so, I mean, I think a lot of listeners can relate to that, right? To trying to fit in, especially, and I can't even imagine that layer of trying to fit in. And also it's hard to be that age. Childhood is hard. And especially even as you like went into your, let's say like your teenage years, did anything shift and change, or where did you feel like you got to a point where, okay, I can accept this? Was that in your childhood, or, you know, both sides of who you are? When did those two pieces kind of meld together?
Yeah. You know, what's funny is my teenage years were marked with even more rebelliousness in me, because my father, who was, again, trying to be a good provider, became even more staunch in his expectation of what I could and couldn't do. Like, I wasn't allowed to date, and I wasn't allowed to go to the prom. I wasn't allowed to stay out late. I had a curfew that was like 8 p.m. And all of my friends in high school were doing the opposite. And so our stress in our life became even more exaggerated. And my mother was also trying to figure out how to maneuver that. And by that time, I had a brother who was 10 years younger than me. And my brother was born with special needs. He was born with spina bifida. And so here came yet one other piece of this puzzle. And so what I learned to do was actually become really quiet. And I became a people pleaser. And I just thought, okay, if I don't cause trouble and if I don't speak my truth, then no one will be mad at me and everyone will be okay. And so I felt like in my teenage years, I rebelled on the inside only, which caused a lot of anger and a lot of sadness and a lot of stress within me. And then I wasn't allowed to go to college. I had to live at home and go to school. And so I didn't really get freedom there. And then same with law school. I ended up going to law school after college because, as a good Indian girl, that's what you do. You either go to medical school or you become an engineer or you go to law school. Like, those were the options because I was a good Indian girl. And so because I couldn't stand the sight of blood, I figured medical school was not going to be the place I would end up. And so I went to law school, and then I also lived at home all through law school because that was what was required of me through my culture. And I remember so distinctly really wondering what the point of life was, because I felt so restricted and so controlled, and that I was on a daily basis fighting for freedom. But I didn't really know what the freedom was, and I didn't really know what it meant to me. I just felt like I was in a constant internal struggle about who I was and what I was supposed to do in the world.
I can't even imagine how tough, just even hearing you say that, right? There's a lot of things in your story that I don't actually know. So I'm excited to kind of dive in. And so you said that you went to law school because you couldn't stand the sight of blood. Was there anything else about the law that maybe at the time you thought, oh, this is going to be great, this is really exciting, and then now you can look back and see, obviously, hindsight. But what was it about law school that had you excited or maybe not?
I mean, law school itself was a challenging experience, but intellectually, I was stimulated to understand what it meant to stand up for yourself or somebody else. And so what the real dichotomy was that my entire life I had wanted to stand up for myself, but I didn't know how. And here I was in an educational program where that was what we were taught to do. How do you fight for somebody else? How do you litigate for somebody else? What is the law or the mission behind why you can say what you want to say? And so law school is what brought out my boldness. It brought out my inner warrior. It brought out my, what I call today, my divine feminine. It allowed me to feel empowered because day in and day out, that's what I had to do. You know, in law school, we have the Socratic method. So the professor calls on you, you have to stand up in front of your class of 200 people, and you basically have a back and forth with the professor. And if you're not on your game and you're not empowered and you don't know how to answer those questions, it's a pretty embarrassing moment, and there was no way I was going to let that happen. So I became a preparer. I became strong. I faked it until I made it. And then one day I graduated law school and I was a completely different person. Not only because I had a law degree, but because I finally understood how to stand up for who I am and what I want.
Right. And you, as you alluded to, you got to stand up for other people. So I know that you represented a lot of people in hard situations. Can you talk a little bit more about who, right out of college or a few years down the line, where were you? What were you doing? And who were you representing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to law school at The Ohio State University. Go Buckeyes for anyone listening. And then I had a law degree, and that meant that I could go anywhere I wanted because I was no longer reliant on a parental figure to pay for something or put a roof over my head. I had a job. And so I came to Atlanta, Georgia, because I was deeply committed to doing criminal defense work. And through the lessons I had learned in law school, I was deeply committed to doing criminal defense work in the South. And so I came down to Atlanta and I landed my dream job, which was to work with clients that were facing the death penalty. And that passion for me started in law school because I have always been committed to fighting for those that have never been given a voice because it was very much my own personal story, my own personal struggle. And so I came down to Atlanta, and for 15 years, I was a public defender and I worked with clients facing the death penalty, but also clients who basically were facing criminal charges but couldn't afford a lawyer. So that is where I spent the majority of my legal career. I spent a couple of years in New York, and then I spent a couple of years in Providence, Rhode Island, actually as a law professor, but always around the issue of criminal representation for the indigent. And it was some of the best years of my life. I was obsessed with my work. I was a workaholic. I worked with people who were committed and passionate to a bigger cause. And at the same time, like most positions in which you work for the government, we were severely underfunded and underpaid. And so we were working a ridiculous amount of hours for very little pay. And that eventually led to a burnout for me. And yeah, it was definitely a time in my life in which I worked hard and I played hard. And anything else that didn't fit into those two categories went by the wayside. So that meant my health and my finances and my mental health. There was a lot of drinking and a lot of partying to cope with a high stress and high stakes environment in which literally life or death was on the table.
Right. And I think a lot of people, again, listening can probably relate to that. In points of your life when you're under so much stress. And I can't even imagine what you were going through at that time, right? To represent people that didn't have a voice and this stress. And it's not, I mean, I don't want to say it's a burden, but it's like all that stress that you're putting on yourself to make sure like you're their last hope. And I think that for me communicates just the strength that you had at that time. And also, if you think about this and especially what you're creating here, right? You are probably so far into your masculine of standing up for people and trying to argue. And I'm guessing there's a lot of kind of aggression maybe. So I want to hear more about the masculine, feminine. Where were you on that spectrum at that time?
Absolutely. Not only was I in my masculine, 95% of my colleagues were men. And the profession is filled with men. Most of the judges are men. Most of the clients are men. Most of the prosecutors are men. Most of the police officers are men. And so I got paid to argue for a living. That's what I got paid to do, to come in and fight, to come in and hold power and wield power and make arguments on behalf of people that had allegedly done some terrible things. But men that I also knew were more than the worst thing they had ever done. And so that is where my feminine came in. I can recognize now that while in a courtroom, I was absolutely as fierce as any of the other men in the courtroom. I also recognize that when I was talking to my clients and talking to their families, that the feminine healer inside of me was coming out. That the intuition and the emotional intelligence that is such a part of being in our feminine was equally as powerful in the work that I did. I just didn't know it at the time, because at the time I was trying to be like everybody else. So that meant fighting and arguing and sometimes being really nasty and sometimes, you know, assuming the worst in the person sitting across the table from you, whether that's a prosecutor or a judge or a police officer, and just coming in ready for a fight. I mean, I remember there were many, many days in my life during that time where my first thought every morning was, what is the worst thing that's going to happen today? And there would be like a real sense of pride when you came back to the office after a day in court if you had the worst thing happen to you. And it was such a foreign concept to me now. But at the end of the day, the work that I did as a criminal defense lawyer was healing work. It just had a different mask on it.
Totally. So yes, and as you're arguing with people and going through this, I mean, I can't even imagine the stress. Just everything that you just said, I can resonate and relate to in different areas, but I can't imagine the weight that you were carrying at that moment. And so it's no wonder then that you hit burnout. So talk to me about, was there a moment after these 15 years of arguing and defending people and, you know, being this, just as you said, fierce lawyer, what happened from there?
Well, here's the thing. I wish it could be as poetic as like, oh, I had this aha moment and I was like, oh, I just need to take care of myself and, you know, make some changes and figure out how to have less stress in my life. No, in fact, as you know, Phoebe, and some of our listeners know, the universe will always give you what you need, even if you don't want it. And so the universe literally put me on my ass. So physically, mentally, emotionally, financially, I hit rock bottom because I ignored signs for along the way for years. I thought, oh, I'm just coping. Oh, I'm just going to have that one more drink. Oh, it's no problem that I'm not sleeping enough. Oh, no big deal. No, literally, I couldn't get out of bed and I had zero idea how to fix it. Because there was nothing physically wrong with me. I now know that basically I was in severe energy depletion and full-blown depression. But I just thought that's how you live life. At least that's all how all the lawyers around me were living life. I didn't think it was that different until I got knocked on my ass. And so then and I think I had met you just right before that. And so here's the thing, right? Most of us are really good at hiding it. And so on the outside, I had all of my shit together. You wouldn't have known that on the inside, I was completely falling apart, right? And let's go back to my childhood. I learned how to do that really well. I learned how to mask and be whatever personality you needed me to be in the moment. And so I just continued to do that. So none of my friends even recognized that I was deeply struggling. And the third day that I couldn't get out of bed, and I mean like literally couldn't get out of bed, I heard a voice that said to go to India. Now, mind you, I'd moved from India many, many years earlier. I'd gone back to visit a few times, but I had never lived there since I was 5 years old. And so I had no idea why this voice in my head was supposed to telling me to go back to India. And by the way, I didn't really believe the voice in the first place. I really thought I was making it up because I was so disconnected with my intuition at that point. But because I had nothing else to do and had no other way of solving it, I decided to listen to the voice. And here's the other thing. I thought I would go to India for a few weeks. Someone would give me some medicine. I would, I don't know, figure some stuff out, and I'd come back and I'd go right back to work and life would be just fine. And I stayed in India for over a year because I just needed to get over there to fully realize that what I was in the middle of was a complete breakdown to a breakthrough. I just didn't know it when I was here. And spiritually, I now know that it's called the dark night of the soul. And these are some of the stories we talk to our guests on the podcast is their dark night of the soul, which is literally a spiritual breakdown that's been orchestrated by the universe in order to help us awaken our Ananda. And that's how I landed in India. And a year into my journey in India of my own self-healing, I came to the realization that the work I'm supposed to do in the world is now to empower others to understand that there can be a breakdown to a breakthrough.
And so when you're over there, what kinds of things? So you said you were there for over a year and you're learning this, you're listening to, you know, I only know this because I remember talking to you in those during that time. But when you're over there, what are you doing on a day-to-day basis? What did that look like?
Well, for the first few months, luckily, I had family that was there and I went to live with my mom's sister, who's a Reiki energy healer and a yoga teacher. And so for the first few months, she literally nursed me back to life with energy healing, with yoga, with delicious homemade food, with love and care and concern. And I stayed with her for 2 to 3 months, and I had never felt like someone had taken care of me in the way she took care of me. I had just forgotten. And I, you know, and my parents had tried to do that. I think they saw that I was struggling before I came to India, but I didn't want to admit that I needed anybody's help or that I didn't have my shit together. But my aunt in India took one look at me and she was like, "I got this." And I think there's just so much power when someone looks at you and says, "I'm going to help you," and you believe with every ounce of your being that they actually are. And so for those first 3 months, I just brought myself back to life, to a vitality that I hadn't felt in years. And then after that, I started taking classes. So I started taking Reiki classes and spiritual classes and yoga teacher training. And then I started traveling north, south, east, and west in India, wherever I was guided to go. because the only thing I knew for sure was that I wasn't ready to come back to the United States. I didn't know why I was going to all of these places, but I started trusting and building my intuition. I started exploring my psychic abilities. I started understanding that there were keys of knowledge and wisdom within me. Again, all of this for my own healing, not with any intention to come back and do the work that I do now. But literally, I went north, south, east, and west throughout India, just learning from some of the most profound humans that till today that I've ever met, and some of the most kindest, mystical, magical souls who, in some ways, I feel like had been waiting for me to show up so they could share their knowledge. My year in India absolutely transformed my life and who I am and what I know to be true about the universe that we live in.
And so when you're over there, like, this is just so interesting, exciting, right? To be on this path and hearing all of this stuff, you can just like feel your excitement and what this did for you, just even hearing you say it and talk about it and relive it probably in some ways. And so you were no stranger, obviously, to travel. And so that wasn't hard. But I'm just thinking, if you're listening to this and you're like, well, does that mean I've got to go to India? Or like, what do you think it was about India that was so important for you to be there? Because you had been there previously, but what was it at that time that for India to call you?
Yeah, that's such a great question, because I understand that not everyone can go to India or Bali or Thailand or have an eat, pray, love moment, as so many people describe what happened to me. I don't think that's what everyone has to do. I think it's what I had to do. But I'll tell you the biggest aha moment for me, and it wasn't all great and fun. There were many, many moments of isolation and loneliness and confusion, because I traveled by myself doing deep, deep healing work in remote parts of India where many people around me didn't speak English and certainly had no idea what I was going through. But it was in those moments that I was able to cultivate a relationship with myself. I was able to communicate with my soul. And I think that is the key to awakening, is to first understand that we have this beautiful power source within us that we call our soul or our higher self, or some people call it guides or angels. I actually think we're all connected. And I think until I had to be alone in the depths of my darkness in remote locations in India, I had never actually stopped to turn inward and figure out, who am I and what am I doing here? And I don't believe that you have to go to India to figure that out. But I do think we need to cultivate time and energy to have those moments of going inward.
100%. I'm like just nodding along here with you. And then I'm like, oh yeah, we're still going. So I do. I'm like, yes, keep going. So I want to keep in the flow of this. And so when did you know, how did you know, who told you that you needed to come back? What was that situation like?
I made a commitment to myself that I knew that I would lose everything if I stayed in India, and that I had to be okay with that. And so I did. I lost my job. I lost all of the savings in my bank account. I lost relationships. I lost friendships. But I knew that the call to remain true to myself and understand the depths of who I was required me to stay in India. And I also trusted and surrendered that when the time was right, I would know to go back. And so I basically just trusted that the guidance would come. Because by the time I was in my last few months in India, I was on solid footing. I was grounded. I was vivacious and vibrant and full of light and full of love. And so I was in very, very joyful moments. And I knew that the minute enough healing had happened, the universe would say, okay, now go. And that's exactly what happened. I was sitting in a cafe in North India. I had just finished my second yoga teacher training. And that same voice that told me to go to India basically said, it's time to go home now. Oh, and before you go home, go and see this one person. And I was like, okay. So there was this one teacher that I've been playing phone tag with in Rishikesh, India, in North India, that I was trying to just meet up with, because you know how these things work. Someone says, go see so-and-so, and then someone else says, go see so-and-so. So I was trying to meet up with this one particular teacher and healer. And finally, I met up with him. And he said, would you like to do a meditation together? And I said, of course. And so we sat on the bank of the most holy river in India, the Ganga, and we did a meditation. And he simply put his hand on my knee, and he looked at me and he said, you know it's time to go home. And I said, I know it's time to go home, but I don't know what to do when I go home. And he said, you're meant to be a healer. You're meant to be a spiritual teacher. You have gone through everything that you have gone through, so you may bring others onto the path. And so now you go, and you'll know when it's time to come back to India to learn more. And just this morning, and I'm not even kidding with you about the timing of this, I know that come September 2019, I'll be back in India for 3 weeks, because I just feel this calling to go. And I just feel this calling to go in September. Don't know what I'm going to do there. I just know that the next level of my learning is going to come during that month.
That's pretty awesome. Okay. Well, there we are. So now, okay, you come back, and the transition, what is the transition like? Is it as graceful and
simple? It's crazy.
Thank you. Right. No. So it's hard, right? I can't imagine. I mean, everyone talks about reverse culture shock. And I think just from what I know about what you experienced, right? It wasn't this, let's just step back into my normal life, because it's one of those paradigm shifts. Nothing's changed, but everything's changed. So talk to me about kind of where you were in when you came back.
Yeah, it was integration is hard. No matter if you're integrating from an awakening moment, a weekend retreat, or a year-long journey, it makes no difference. And also whether you're integrating from a major life event like a divorce or the birth of a child, you still have to integrate to what I would call your new normal. But you're exactly right. It's only your new normal. In everyone else's world, their normal is exactly the same. And so, almost like clockwork, within days of coming back to the US, that deep sinking feeling of depression started to arise. And everything I thought I had worked on and healed came flooding back. And I was like, shit, was it all a dream? Like, was it all fake, what happened in India? And luckily, I actually came to the Center for Love and Light, where we're hosting this podcast, and which is a place filled with practitioners. And I came and I had a Reiki healing session with someone here. And I explained to her what I was feeling. And she said, oh, okay, you just need community. Community to hold you as the pendulum swings back to balance, because that's what had happened. I had gone from the pendulum swinging so much in one direction, and then it was swinging in so much in another direction, that coming back home to integration meant the balance of that pendulum. And so I had to forcefully take time, surround myself in community, and then deal with the voices, not only in my head, but of the people around me who were saying, well, what are you doing? What are you going to do? You were gone for a year. What do you mean you need me more time? Right? The whole rules of how we should show up, and you're not working, and the money and the stress and the problems. Like, it became this vortex of everyone still trying to figure out why I wasn't totally healed and normal. I remember those. So for a good 2 months after I came back, I went into isolation almost. Like, I can't actually talk to anyone. because I don't need more pressure. And I knew and I had faith that all I needed to do was wait for that pendulum to come back, and it did. And I came back in January, and by March 6th, I had started my business of healing. I started seeing a few clients, and then I started getting more and more comfortable in my own skin as a new evolution of the person that I was.
And as you were kind of working through all of that, right, it's like you're, I can just imagine like the vision that I have is like just this wall hitting you, right, of like just your family and judgments and expectations and all of these things that people are probably peppering you with questions. And that's the last thing you needed. So, and you started doing all this healing, and now here you are starting this show and allowing your voice to be heard. So I think if I could sum up a lot of your story, right, it's this needing to be heard, right? And like helping others get be heard. So I think your voice is so important. It's so needed in the podcasting world and in the spiritual world, just in the world in general. And so I'm really excited about what you're doing, how you're showing up on this show. And I just, for somebody who's listening to this and wants to kind of get a glimpse into what we can expect moving forward from the show, I know you spoke about it in the last episode, but what is the intention behind this show? And what do you, how do you want people to feel as they move through and listen to this show?
Yeah. And I have a real, intention. I don't want to be another personal development podcast. I say that with the utmost respect to all of the podcasts out there, but I want to add a real break from the chaos for people, not add another to-do list item. Oh, you must meditate, or you must go to yoga, and you must do it this way. And if you don't do it this way, it's not spiritual. I want people to hear from everyday humans who are struggling and feeling and living life in HD. And I want to work with men and women who are allowing themselves to be seen in their authenticity and their rawness and their realness. And my goal of this podcast is never to lead people, right? The goal of this podcast is for me to lead me and for my guests to lead themselves, and then everyone who's listening to understand that there's an inner guru and that all we're doing is walking each other home side by side. And so I want there to be real experiences of deep trust and deep relationship building and not preaching, because I don't think what people need is another guru from the outside telling them what they should do. I want to enable everyone to listen to their inner wisdom and figure out what resonates with them. And so I am committed every day to trying to think of content and stories and metaphors and guests that's going to allow people to truly be in authentic transcendence and radical freedom and a deep surrender to less force and more flow. That's the intention of this podcast.
And I just love the phrase that came to my head as you were talking was just this safe haven, right? A place for people to pause. And that's something that you do so well, and something that I think people are really going to resonate with on this show specifically, because as you said, we don't need any more noise. There's so much noise and chaos in the world right now. And for you to be this bright light and a place for people to come to get that daily dose or weekly dose, whatever it is, weekly dose of inspiration, of digging deep and allowing that to be okay. And one of the things that I love, Priya, about what you do and who you are is just you're so normal and relatable, and you're not on this pedestal, right? If anything, you knock yourself off the pedestal, which is so important that we're doing this episode, because I really want people to see who you are and what you've been through and where you've come from and how you are progressing forward and the evolution of Priya, because it hasn't always been roses and rainbows. It's been hardship and struggle, and also the exact thing that you needed to get to where you are today. And so I think this podcast specifically is so important. It's so relevant, so needed. And I just am so excited. I'm so proud for you in what you're creating. And I know that if you're listening to this and you're resonating with Priya's journey and her, the ups and the downs and feeling like you don't belong. And this is a place that she is cultivating a real true belonging. And so I just want to make sure that I tell the people listening how authentic and how genuine and just how impactful your voice is in the world and how needed it is. And I'm so excited to celebrate alongside you and to witness the greatness that you are providing other people and yourself. So I just want to say congratulations. And I'm so pumped for you. And I'm so excited, if you're listening to this, for you to be witness to the evolution, the next evolution of Priya. This is so cool. And congratulations.
Oh, Phoebe. Oh, I received that. I received that. Thank you so, so much for seeing me and hearing me and allowing the space for me to evolve and grow, and for your kindness and your unwavering support and unconditional love. And thank you so much for doing this episode with me. I am deeply honored to be your friend. And I'm so grateful that our souls chose each other in whatever lifetime to continue our journey together in this lifetime. And I you inspire me. And I'm just really pumped to have you by my side. And so thank you for your kind words. And for the listeners who want to get to know more about you, Phoebe, and your podcast, tell us a little bit about what it is that you do and how people can find out more about you, my dear, beautiful friend.
Thank you. And I will receive that as well. So if you do want to hear more about me and kind of learn more about what I'm doing in the world, in my small little corner of the world, I have a show called Unbecoming, and it's basically how to release the judgments and expectations for who you think you should be and need to be. And I love to help people create what they want by being more of who they are. And so I'm talking to entrepreneurs, athletes like Mia Hamm. Now that I can say that, that is just so awesome.
Woo-woo!
And helping tell a different story. And so you can find me at, you can search wherever you're listening to this show. My show is called Unbecoming. And I am opening up some local podcasts, one of which is called New Two. And the first place we're going is Austin. So learning more about Austin. So if that is appealing to you, I would love to invite you over to learn more about me. And this is not about me, but I did want you to know where you can find me in my little corner of the world. But thank you for having me. And it's been such an honor to get to hear more about you and get to share you with your audience. And I can't wait. And if they are half the fans that I am about you, this show is going to be such a blast. So I am going to be adding it to my podcast list for sure. And I'm just so, as I said, proud for you. I just think you're doing such cool things in the world. So my spiel.
Thank you, Phoebe. Thank you, Phoebe. And thank you all the listeners. Welcome to the journey of the Awaken and on the podcast. I can't wait to share the rest of the episodes with you. And Phoebe will definitely be back for an episode all about her sometime in the future. But in the meantime, remember that we're all on a journey to awaken our inner guru. So I hope the stories from today and the beautiful conversation that my beloved sister and I had encourage you on the path. And until next time, have a beautiful, beautiful day.
The ideas expressed by guests of Awaken Ananda do not necessarily reflect Priya's personal beliefs. Information received from the Awaken Ananda podcast should not be used as a substitute for medical or psychological advice. If you're interested in working with Priya, sign up for a transformational coaching or intuitive healing session at awakenananda.com. Listen to more episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms, and be sure to visit Priya and the Lighter Side Network at thelightersidenetwork.com. The Lighter Side Network, where the everyday meets the extraordinary.